Coming up on Colchonero Chat, Robbie and I are discussing Atletico's 1-0 win over Rostov in the Champions League. A gritty, grind-em-out kind of win. We'll talk all about it. And we'll also preview Atletico's game against Sevilla in La Liga this weekend, a battle of two Champions League teams. Stick with us. Welcome to Colchonero Chat, the podcast of record of IntoTheCalderon.com, a proud member of the SB Nation family of blogs. Our second one this week, Robbie.
Yeah.
I'll edit that out.
Okay, yeah. Okay, well, let's just start then.
Yeah. So our second Colchonero Chat of the week, Jeremy Barron here, Robbie Dunn as well. Talking all about...
Hey, what's going on, Jeremy?
Robbie, pleasure as ever. We'll be talking all about the Rostov game. Lots to discuss there. It was a game that went about as I expected, really. I think you did as well. And we'll talk about what is expected to be a very different game on Sunday back in La Liga against Sevilla. And that's a game that I think could also be very difficult. But let's start with Wednesday night in Rostov. Cold as heck. It just looked freezing. The players all bundled up on the bench. I believe it was 3 degrees Celsius was the game time, the kickoff temperature, which, you know, freezing. That's really, really cold.
Well, so, what's that in? That's Celsius. So what would that be in Fahrenheit?
You're asking me to do math on the air.
I know,
It's a very risky proposition.
Because I was trying to think, because I know Americans do Fahrenheit, but yeah, 2 is absolutely very, very chilly.
Yeah, it's,
as we saw, Koke was sporting his lovely gloves, and Simeone went for the jacket.
Yep, Gamero had the beanie going, he had the face warmer going.
Yeah.
He looked very, very cold. It's in the 30s in terms of Fahrenheit. So yeah, okay. It's very cold. I believe the kickoff temperature in Astana last year was -10 degrees Celsius. So that's really
cold. No, that's...
And that was, as we recall, a really miserable, abject game that finished 0-0 and nearly cost Atletico the group. We didn't want a repeat of that, so Atletico came out and took control early. They played better than I expected them to play. I thought it would be more difficult for them, not just because of the terrain, not just because of the pitch conditions, but also Rostov had not lost at home since May of 2015. They'd gone 26 games in all competitions unbeaten at home, which is pretty darn impressive.
Same amount of time since Sevilla had last won the away from home, actually.
That's right.
It's funny. May 2015, yeah. But you guessed it right on the podcast earlier on the week.
I did.
You said 1-0 and
guessed the 1-0.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like you said it would go, and just like we thought it would. I mean, it was, and as I wrote in my report after yesterday, I was just saying that no one's going to be talking about this game in a couple of months' time, and I mean, it was vital to get the 3 points, get out of town with the 3 points. And just look to the next game, because that was a really difficult tie, given the conditions, given the travel circumstances, given the game that's coming up this weekend. No, we didn't have any injuries. Everyone seems to be okay. So yeah, I mean, a very successful and productive Wednesday night, I would say.
Atletico can secure progression to the knockout stage next time out against Rostov at the Calderon, and I would expect a rotated side for that game. There were some complaints that Atletico didn't rotate for this game, considering the opposition, considering Atletico had just come off the 7-1 win against Granada. You know, where's Lucas? Where's Tomas? Where's Vrsaljko? Simeone took this game very seriously, and he repeated the 11 that beat Granada, except Fernando Torres came in for Kevin Gamero. And Torres played very well. We'll talk about the individual players in a sec, but this was a very, very important game, and Atletico started brightly. They took it very seriously. Angel Correa missed a couple sitters in the first half, which was unfortunate for him, but Atletico were the better side for swaths of the game. Rostov had a couple chances at the end, a couple half chances at the end. But overall, it was a very solid performance. That's Atletico's third 1-0 victory in the Champions League this season in three games. And it's the sixth consecutive Champions League game in which Atletico have scored one goal.
Yeah.
The that started the semi-final against Bayern Munich. Go ahead, Robbie.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, yeah. So there's, and like you said, they were the better team. They were on top for most of the, all of the game. They had a lot of very good chances, but those things happen, even to the best teams in the world. We've seen Barcelona struggle to break, not even struggle to break down teams, but struggle to create, I suppose.
They didn't have any problems doing that against City, though.
Yeah. in terms of just that chance that turns the whole game, and I suppose if you were talking about expected goals or something like that, they would be high up. They would be quite. You'd finish the most times, but just that bit of luck deserting them on the night or poor finishing and things like that, and that's going to happen. But I just think that the most important thing, as I've said, was the 3 points and getting that important goal. And right, the fluff chances, fair enough. But I mean, on another day like we saw against Granada 4 days previous, they scored those goals.
Yep. And the man who got the goal on Wednesday, the star of the show, once again, Yannick Carrasco, his fifth goal in four games. And following up the hat trick on Saturday with, this was another really excellent goal, excellent build-up. The Juan Fran cross, that there was a dummy by Torres. Torres might have actually gotten a foot on it or some body part on it before it fell to Carrasco, and he made no mistake at the back post. And just a brilliant setup and another great goal. The lad is on fire.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the man of the moment. He was. I actually didn't think he was that great in the first half. He made a couple of decisions. No, he was heavily involved and he was doing a lot of things right. At the end of the day, he scored the important goal. He scored the only goal of the game. That's all that really matters. But, well, to an extent, that's all that matters. But.
Mm.
I thought he was not poor in the first half, but some of his decision making kind of deserted him a little bit. He was maybe trying to force it again. There was one or two that, there was one in particular where he was kind of running down, and all he had to do was play through Correa, and he kept going with it, looking for the shot, and he ended up just running the ball out. I think he either ran the ball out over the line or he got a deflection or something silly, and all he had to do was play Correa in. Maybe he was just kind of going for glory. Listen, he's still very, very young, and quite raw. So those things will happen. But he got the important goal, and that's really all that matters, as I said.
You know, it's interesting you say that. In basketball, there is a statistic known as usage rate, in which it tries to estimate what percentage of possessions a player uses when they're on the floor. Yannick Carrasco's usage rate in the first half was about 60%.
So what would the 60%? He was used in 60% of the attacks. Is that what it, or?
But yeah, what I'm trying to express is that Carrasco took pretty much every chance. Every time he saw the ball, he took it up and tried to shoot.
Oh, I get you. Yeah. And I think a couple of the players who understand what a hot streak is, I'm sure, and they want to get the ball to the man who's feeling it. But I think he was, and I think you could see that Correa was upset that he didn't get played through that time. Torres was kind of looking at him a couple of times, saying like, right, okay, you've got a hot hand, but like, throw the ball around a bit, you know, like, and there's no bad blood, I'm sure. There's good enough chemistry there, and he did end up getting the goal, and that's all that mattered really. So I'm sorry, I keep saying that, but like, there was a couple of times where Carrasco did kind of force it, and his teammates. Kind of looked at him and threw their arms up in the air and things like that. But but I'm sure that'll be fine as long as he keeps knocking them in.
He's in good enough form to where you can. Simeone has encouraged him to shoot more. This is a quote we've seen from him in the first couple months of the season. He wants Carrasco to shoot more, and Carrasco naturally is a player who takes a lot of touches, and wants the ball, needs the ball at his feet. And right now, it's really working.
And then there's other times though when he doesn't. Maybe he's just not very good at shooting first time, and maybe we shouldn't be encouraging him to do that. But there is times when I feel like he does have the chance to whip it first time, and he doesn't, and he kind of takes it. Maybe gives the defender the chance to step up, make one more step towards him, closing down the space and kind of giving the keeper a better eye as to what he's going to do. Mm. Whereas if he swung it first time with his right, there was one instance I remember in the first half, I was thinking, just hit it. And he was in a really good position to bend it, and he has a really nice bend. He can put a really nice swerve on the ball. And he didn't, and he took a step, and he was always going inside. He was always going that direction. The defender knew it. And he knew it, and the goalkeeper knew it. So when he eventually did kind of take that step and they swung it, he did force a save from the keeper, but if he had hit it maybe a little bit earlier, he could have got it further outside the keeper, and maybe the keeper would have been left with no chance. But but we haven't seen him really. Well, he did actually. He struck that first one, or his third against Granada, first time.
Yes, he did.
And he buried it. So maybe it's something that we should keep an eye out for in the future. But he takes a lot of touches. He's kind of similar to Philippe Luis in that situation, like he's similar in that.
In terms of the touches they take, in terms of the possessions
Philippe Luis was actually overdoing it, I felt like last night at times.
I thought Felipe was very good again. I wrote in my player ratings, his passing was excellent. He played 86 minutes on the yellow card also, which was very impressive because he was inside the first 5 minutes. Yeah. And
he tends to get yellow cards kind of. Not in bunches and not all that often.
Through very rash decisions he gets them.
He what?
Like through very rash decisions and very impulsive kind of fouls he tends to get them.
But they seem like, I don't know, they don't seem like, he doesn't get emotionally, it's more like a considered rash challenge. I know that's a paradox, but it's like. You know, I remember he got a yellow against Arda Turan, and it wasn't like he'd lost his cool, but it was like he had thought about it. He's like, I'm going to do this now next. And, you know, instead of Gabby, who gets caught for pace, or when he loses the ball, he may not kick out at someone, but flick someone's heels. Felipe Luis doesn't typically do that. He's more kind of thinks these things out, maybe. I don't know, I'm probably looking too much into this, but he's able to prevent himself when he knows he's on a yellow. Then he can prevent himself from getting that next yellow. So he was very good again, but there was a couple of times, and he actually won a free for one instance where he went by a couple of players, and we know when he is in that dribbling form, he's like Andrej Kanchelskis for Manchester United back in the day or someone. He just glides by players. But there was once or maybe twice that he kind of overdid it, and he ended up losing the ball in the first half anyway. So, he was excellent again, and he adds so much to that left-hand side. And if you're looking for factors as to why Yannick Carrasco is playing so well, it's that those two are on the same page now. They're frightening the lives out of right-sided defenders and right midfielders, and they just seem to be enjoying their football together at the moment.
That was actually one of the questions. I do agree, and that was one of the questions we received. What systematic change do you think has allowed YFC to go into this form? It's the play of his fullbacks. Felipe and Juan Fran are the best tandem on the continent right now. I think that's pretty clear. They're both in excellent form. And the Spanish national team may not have a use for Juan Fran. That's fine. Atletico do. So that's helped him. Carrasco just growing as a player has also helped. And he is shooting more. and he looks more comfortable than he did at this time last season. It did take him a few months to really make his mark. It was the derby last season against Madrid, in which he kind of introduced himself to Atletico fans and to Spain when he came on and played very, very well and created the goal that Vieto scored in that game if it had finished 1-1. The other question about Carrasco that we got from at QDP35, how good do you predict this enlightened YFC will be? How good can he be? What's his potential? We've seen this since he was at Monaco, and very talented player, obviously, occasionally brilliant. How good can he get, Robbie?
Yeah, I saw somewhere. I suppose that depends on a couple of things. I mean, it depends on maybe, and I haven't seen this question, so this is just off the top of my head, but it depends on his career moves. I mean, he has to be really smart here. I saw recently there that he wants his, Atletico want to increase his buyout clause from £35 million, I believe that is. But he says that's fine, but he wants it to be a reasonable buyout clause that can be paid. Like, okay, you've got Messi there, his buyout clause is £200 million plus, which is a ridiculous number that no one's ever going to pay.
Cristiano's like 1 billion euros?
Yeah, I want to say it's a billion euros or something like that. Carrasco obviously isn't going to be 1 billion, but he wants it to be reasonable to the point where teams will consider it. So he's ambitious, but he has to be really careful here because Simeone turns Griezmann into this absolutely awesome player, top three and top five in the world. Carrasco seems to be his next kind of, I won't say project, but he looks to be the next guy that's going to break into that kind of world, that elite level. But if he leaves too soon, maybe for a Barcelona, maybe for a Chelsea or a maybe Manchester United, someone like that, is he going to receive the same attention? Is he going to be given the same opportunities? Is he going to be given the same coaching? Like, you don't know. So his best bet is to stick around with Simeone for as long as he can. And then, I mean, how good can he be? I mean, there's absolutely nothing stopping him from becoming as good as Gareth Bale. If he improves his finishing, gets a little bit stronger up top, he's as quick, he's as quick as him, he's got as good a close control as him, just improve his finishing and get a little bit stronger, and he can be as good as Gareth Bale, top, depending on injuries, depending on who's playing well. But Bale is a top five player. Carrasco could easily be a top 6-8 player in the world. Well, I won't say easily.
Bold.
I won't say easily. He could be as good as Gareth Bale.
I do have a couple things on that. Number one, the pre-match presser quote from Simeone was, "Atletico is where players like Carrasco and Griezmann come here as boys and they turn into men." I love that quote. And that kind of speaks to what you were just talking about with regards to the maturity and how Griezmann has evolved. And I want to ask you about Griezmann in a second. But with Carrasco, I think he can become not necessarily top 6-8. I'll slightly disagree with you there. Maybe top 10 to 12 or 10 to 15. He's got the explosiveness. He needs to improve his finishing and decision making. When he is in form, it's spellbinding to watch. He's explosive. He's pacey. He'll take on everyone in the defense. He took on every single defender. Rostov were playing 5 at the back. He didn't care. They had 8 men behind the ball. He didn't care. He took on every one of them. He's got the audacity. He's got that ambition. Atletico need to renew him. The discussions have taken place since the summer. They were put on the shelf for a little while. Then they were brought back into focus. Atletico have to renew him. He's become such an important player. Better than Arda Turan ever was. Maybe not ever was, but certainly Arda's last year, 2014-15, left a bad taste in the mouth because he was not very good that season.
And no, he was very poor.
Carrasco is such an important player, different than Arda Turan was. but his importance, and he's only 23, how he can grow so much more. And I think it's important that that growth comes under Simeone at Atletico. I don't think there's another coach who's better for him at this point in his career than Simeone.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That renewal has to get done at some point. I think that it will. There's probably going to be a few more twists and turns before it does, but I think that they will renew him. And we'll see Carrasco in red and white for a few more years. Based on what I've read, I think it'll get done eventually.
Yeah, I think, most top players and youngsters nowadays do, they do tend to have their head on their shoulders, and Carrasco stays out of the news. He's never really, even when he wasn't really playing that much, he didn't make too much of a fuss. He seems to have the right attitude, which is kind of similar to Bale. I mean, Bale never really caused any problems. He never got in any trouble. He kind of stayed out of the limelight. Carrasco seems to be doing the same. He's saying all the right things in terms of the contract renewal. He's not itching for a move away. Nope. He's not saying this and that about other clubs. You know, just the kind of things that tend to kind of rub fans up the wrong way, and then it's all about perception then at the end of the day. So you're saying he's going to be a top 6 to 8 player. A player that's fast and explosive, like you said, is going to be rated higher than maybe like a Mesut Ozil. One while Ozil is, for some people, is a top 5 player, top 6. He probably doesn't get as much credit because he's not as explosive. When Carrasco or when Bale is tearing down the left-hand side and they're leaving people for dead, they get noticed, and then it's all about perception as to, he's amazing. Whereas a player like maybe an Ozil or a De Bruyne doesn't have that pace whereby they don't get recognised as much. And listen, I think Ozil and De Bruyne are absolutely world-class, excellent footballers. But it's all about perception. So, yeah, he's saying all the right things. He's doing it. And he's the kind of player who will be recognised and who will be given every chance, I suppose, if you want to put it like that, to be considered world-class and elite.
I would agree with that. And he's gotten... I think when Gaetan arrived, Carrasco was a little worried. That from what I read in Az over the summer, that was part of the problem with contract negotiations. Gaetan's arrival, he preferred the spot on the wing that Carrasco preferred, but Carrasco has become preferred in the 11 to Gaetan. Gaetan did not play against Rostov, and his playing time, I wouldn't say sporadic, but it's been inconsistent. He's looked very good when he started. He's looked good coming off the bench, but we never really know when he's going to come in the game, what games he's going to play in.
Yeah.
So that's something that Simeone still needs to work out, and when and where Gaetan and Vrsaljko and Lucas and Thomas, when they are going to play. And I want to ask you about Griezmann, who still has not scored in the Champions League this season. 3 games, no goals, but I thought he was great yesterday. Had touches all over the place, all around the final third, creating chances. I remember one in particular. It was a nasty ball over the top to Torres, who just couldn't quite get on the end of it towards, I want to say, in the last 10 minutes or so. He was around the center circle, and he pinged just a sick ball to Fernando Torres, who, again, just couldn't quite get that touch on it. Are you worried at all about Griezmann's Champions League scoring record? And hasn't scored in the Champions League yet this season.
No, I was looking at him last night, and not at all. No, I'd actually prefer that he doesn't score now and then scores later on.
Fair enough.
You know.
Fair enough.
He's been excellent in, and if he wasn't playing well, he still links play quite well and gets involved in everything. And you're gonna have. You're going to have people on Twitter and saying he's a flop and he's a big games, he's a bottler and things like that. And that's fine if they want to say that, but that's ridiculous. I wouldn't be worried at all. Not yet. I mean, as long as he's still scoring in the league, if he doesn't score at all this season and Atletico limp out in the semi-final, quarter-final, obviously concerned then. But no, I mean, look, at the 3 really, really dodgy games not dodgy, but three, like PSV away from home, Bayern at home that he missed a penalty, and then Rostov away from home last night. Like, it's not like they scored four and he didn't score.
They're scoring one goal a game.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And he's also kind of sacrificed himself a little bit. There was one stage there last night, a couple of stages there last night. I saw him dropping deeper again.
Yeah.
And that's maybe a role. And I was just thinking there when you said it about why Carrasco's so good. I'm actually going to do a tactical piece at some point this week to looking at Griezmann dropping back and looking at that, and then also Carrasco and the space and why he's become so good at and why he's playing so well and what are the factors behind it. But yeah, like Griezmann's kind of does tend to sacrifice himself, and if Twitter wants to proclaim him a bottler for that, and Atletico are still winning, then I'm sure Antoine will be okay with that as well.
I think he'll be all right, and it's as close to a Messi role as Atletico have the free reign pretty much Griezmann has all over the place. You never know where he's going to pop up and create chances, and he was great. I thought he was great yesterday, despite only managing one shot, and he was lifted and added time, but his work rate was essential to the team. His vision essential to the team, and again, it's a Messi role that he has. I'm not saying he is Messi; he's not there yet. Maybe he will get there, but he's not there yet. But it's the same kind of philosophy that Simeone has used with Antoine, playing him all around the final third and just giving him free range. Okay, you know, go create, go pick out runs, and you know, score a few goals yourself. There's a lot of responsibility in that role, and Griezmann's very good at it. He's a world-class player for that reason.
Yeah.
Anything else on the Rostov game? Thought it was pretty even in terms of the midfield. In terms of central midfield, Koke and Gabby were both very good. And Rostov played in a 5-3-2, and they had to, you know, clear a lot of crosses away, clear a lot of balls away. But Koke is taking more of a leadership role in central midfield, and I like to see that. There were a couple times where he was waving his arms, barking out orders. There was one time in particular that I remember, and that was great to see. I think that was in the first half. It was great to see. And Gabby was just cool as a cucumber yesterday. Just that's these are the games you need Gabby in. His experience, his leadership, the embodiment of Cholismo. This is why Gabby plays these games, and it's why he's still so important to the team. So I thought that they, Koke and Gabby were both about equally good, even though they did different things. Koke was out there leading counters and keeping things ticking through the center of the park, occasionally drifting to the left as the build-up play was pretty fluid. Atletico really did not have much of a problem creating chances and stringing passes together.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't disagree with that.
So, yeah, anything else from this one? As Atletico are in charge in Group D, and Bayern Munich won, but they are still 3 points behind Atletico. Rostov and PSV are both in deep trouble.
Yeah, Atletico can... I was just looking there. Atletico can... They can qualify if they beat Rostov next time out at home.
Yep. Yes, they can.
Yeah, and Bayern are kind of Bayern are kind of in a weird situation, I think, at the moment. And I don't watch enough Bundesliga or Bayern Munich to make a full on call on that. But yeah, it seems like they're kind of struggling post Pep. And I mean, Atletico are favourites to top the group, I'd say. Now, if they go to the Allianz Arena and get 1 point, and they've got PSV and Rostov at home, you'd be expecting them to win those two. So,
yep.
I mean, it's all looking good at Atletico right now.
Our pal Ewan McTeer wrote in Marca today about how Atletico can actually clinch the group before the game at Allianz Arena. If Bayern drop points somewhere, then that'll pretty much do it. And Bayern at Eindhoven next time out, which, as we know, is a difficult place to go and get 3 points. Atletico just barely did it in the first match day and didn't do it last year in the last 16. So Bayern could drop points there before, and then they travel to Russia. Then they go to Rostov, where Atletico again barely won, even though on the balance of play Atletico could have won 3-0. Rostov is a tough place to go. This is a team that 26 games unbeaten at home before yesterday. So it's actually kind of possible that PSV could drop points with two very difficult games away, potentially very difficult games away, before coming home to Allianz Arena to host Atletico on December 6th. Perhaps Atletico, potentially Atletico could have the group wrapped up by December 6th.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be ideal, wouldn't it?
But it's certainly possible with how Atletico have started the group stage.
But see, I must look this up. I was talking to one of the lads there the other day, and he was saying that it's nearly better for Atletico to finish second, though, because they can't play Barcelona or Real Madrid. Or Sevilla, obviously.
So, yeah, if Sevilla win their group, right.
Yeah, so if they finish, then they're going to get a first. If they finish second, then they're going to get a first, maybe a Leicester.
Or a PSG.
I don't know how it works. I'm going to have to look that up. But yeah, they're nearly better off if they finish second, because they're going to avoid two of the best teams in it, in Barca and Real Madrid.
I mean, they would avoid them anyway because of the same country thing, and teams from the same country cannot be drawn with each other until the quarterfinals. So if Atletico finish second and doesn't matter where Barcelona, Real Madrid, or Sevilla finish, Atletico cannot play them in the last 16.
So
they wouldn't play them until the last week should they all advance.
Yeah, so if they're supposed to meet, I don't know. We'll have to figure that out.
Atletico could face Manchester City if Atletico win the group and Manchester City finish second. That's a potential matchup. If Arsenal win Group A, then Atletico could face PSG if they win. If Atletico win Group D, this is kind of speculation. We're thinking to December or January at this point, but I'm not sure how much of a difference it'll make finishing first or second, because Atletico will avoid the Spanish teams anyway, considering they are a Spanish team. Amazing how that works.
Yeah.
So they would avoid those teams until the quarterfinals, and if they all make the quarterfinal, which is possible considering how good La Liga teams are in European competition.
Exactly.
Well, that'll do it for the Rostov game, and after this we'll preview Sunday's game against Sevilla. Atletico and Sevilla in La Liga this weekend on Sunday. It's a trip to the Pizjuan. Kevin Gamero with a return engagement there. Should be exciting. I hope he starts. And it will be interesting to see how the fans react to him.
Hey, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, come here. I have to go here. Is there any chance I could just talk for a minute or two, and then could you just finish it out?
Yeah, sure.
If you just want to, go ahead. If you just ask me a couple of questions, then I'm going to have to go.
Yeah. So how do you think Kevin Gamero will be received this weekend, Robbie?
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be, given the fact that Sevilla, it depends, I suppose, on what happens during the game, does it? I wouldn't say he's a hero there, but he was involved in some successful seasons with Sevilla, so and it'd be different if they were doing poorly right now, but they're doing really, really well since he left, so they might see that as almost thank him for moving on what he did, and they've replaced him quite well, I think, and they got Vieto in return, who's doing all right with Sevilla at the moment, and I'm sure there'll be a little bit of animosity, and if he scores, even more. But that might be the storyline and the narrative.
That'll be the narrative.
It's gonna be a really, really good game, I think.
And with Ben Yedder and Vieto, I think Sevilla have done fine. Vieto's been okay for Atletico fans who are interested in that. Vieto's done all right, but Sevilla have replaced him capably, and they're top of their Champions League group, and they haven't conceded in the Champions League either. Under Sampaoli.
Yeah, Yeah, everyone's expecting São Paulo to go out and a lot of 3-alls, 3-2s, 4-3s, and there was a couple. There has been a couple, and
the
there's always
6-4 against Espanyol,
and even 3-2 the last day and against Leganés. But like they've been quite strong defensively when they wanted to be and when they've focused on that, I think. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I'd imagine São Paulo feels like he has nothing to lose against Atletico. It's the kind of game where they would be expected almost to lose, and this is the kind of game that's dangerous for Sevilla in that respect, because he's going to come out all guns blazing, kind of Paco Gemez style, thinking we can't lose,
right,
because we're expected almost, maybe not expected, but in the grand scheme of things, they are underdogs for this game, so they'll come out all guns blazing. Atletico will revert to type, sit defensively, it's away from home. They'll settle for a draw, I'd imagine, Atletico, because Sevilla will test Real Madrid and Barcelona later in the year, and other teams. So Atletico will be happy enough here now. Look, they're not going to be as attacking as they have been.
Yeah. And Sevilla went to Croatia midweek and beat Dinamo Zagreb 1-0. Players like Samir Nasri have been reborn under Sampaoli. Nasri's been in amazing form for Sevilla. He's been crucial for them. But I think this will be kind of a more defensive game. Last year, Atletico won 3-0 at Sevilla. Jackson Martinez scored a goal in that game.
That game. Yeah, it was that was actually cagey for the first 15-20 minutes, if I remember correctly.
And Sevilla
had a couple of chances.
In the second half, Sevilla put on a lot of pressure, but Atletico held on and scored two late goals to you know, it wasn't a 3-0. It was a 3-0 win, but Atletico didn't play like it was a 3-0
win.
I think this will be a 1-1 draw. That's what I'm gonna go with. It'll be a very intense game. Sevilla are excellent at home, as Atletico are, and Sevilla are just a really excellent team at home, and it'll be interesting to see the tactical battle between Sampaoli and Simeone. Simeone had Unai Emery's number for years. I wonder how Sampaoli will counter what Simeone and Atletico will do. It'll be a fascinating
match. I'm going for the optimistic approach. I'd say it's going to be 3-1.
3-1 to Atletico.
Yeah,
okay, I was going to say, because you were saying optimistic, I didn't know which team, though. So, yeah, that is on Sunday, and Atletico will look to continue the unbeaten run, which Atletico 5 wins and 3 draws in the league, and 3 wins from 3 in the Champions League. And we will be covering it on Twitter and on the site, intothecalderon.com. Make sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, at JB Barron, at Robbie J. Dunn. And we will catch you probably next Monday on the next Colchonero Chat, where we will review the Sevilla game and more. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Hey, thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, you got it. I think we got it enough there.
Yeah, sounds good. About 40 minutes, no worries.
Yeah, all right, go do what you got to do, man. Thanks so much.
All right, man. Take it easy. Chat to you soon.
Cheers.
Good luck.